This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scolino.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scolino.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. Super excited about today's guests. We've got Daniel Forsch and Nick Hill. These are the hosts of the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast, a nationwide show where they talk about Canadian real estate and where the investment opportunities are. Today, we talk a little bit about that, but we mostly talk about the Toronto real estate market and see how it compares to here in Vancouver.
Yeah, this is a good one. Talk about peeling back the layers of the onion on Toronto real estate. Just how bad is it? Are the headlines right? Is it the epicenter of the tariffs? And what does that mean? How's the economy doing there? What's the vibe? All things Toronto. And a few other things, AI and investment related. So we kind of cover the gamut here today, and with a couple of truth tellers, Adam.
Right. Before we get to that, Matt, of course, we have the segment that remains nameless. I'm super excited about this segment. I just, on a side note, I went to Letterman and Zach Galifianakis last night.
Oh, right. How was it?
Incredible show, but it got me thinking, we used to joke a lot more on this show. Now we're pretty serious.
Oh.
But maybe you really have a question. Give me a riddle here.
Well, this one is a pretty serious question, Adam. I wasn't at the the David Letterman, Zach Galifianakis show last night. So
no, you missed, yeah.
What I can tell you is, you know, we've been talking a lot about doom and gloom in the market. I kind of wanted a question. It was a little bit more uplifting and, you know, a green shoots question. And this is one courtesy of Richard Whitstock, who did not send it in. Although if you do have quiz questions, we'd love to have them sent in. Richard is a friend of the show, principal over at Domus Homes. He's been on a couple times, really smart observer of the real estate market. And I saw this post on LinkedIn and I thought I would quiz you. So Adam, here's a question for you. What was the combined year-over-year in January, year-over-year inventory change across core submarkets? And here I'm thinking downtown Vancouver West, Surrey, Burnaby North, from January 2025 through January 2026. What's the percentage?
So, I mean, you framed it in a way. Well, let's get to, before I answer, let's cut to a new listing, Matt.
We launched a couple of pretty exciting listings this week, but this one is right new on the market. It's unit 312 at 7330 Salisbury Avenue in Highgate. Adam, let me tell you about this. This is what Vancouver families are looking for, which is who is in the market active right now. Two bed, two bath home in a lead Mac building, right a couple blocks off of Highgate Village. What I love about this building is amongst a lot of density there, right near the Edmonds SkyTrain station. This building from 2003, lead Mac built, is low rise, low density, very clear community vibe on a residential street, but you're still blocks from the SkyTrain, still blocks from Save On Foods, the cafes and restaurants of Highgate Village. This one's a showstopper. Check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Two bed, two bath, 916 square feet. Offered at $719,900,
Adam. Yeah, no, I love that complex. I love that pocket. And you're right. It's a really great building, great for end users. Well, back to the question. You gave away the answer, I think, in the way you formed the question.
Oh, because I said green shoots.
Green shoots, yeah. So I'm guessing you're thinking.
Hold on. I'm going to make it tougher for you.
Okay.
What was the combined year-over-year inventory change across core submarkets? Were we year over year. In terms of inventory, down 4.9%, up 3.2%, down 12.7%, or down 7.7%.
Ooh, that does make it a lot more challenging.
But you know what I gave you in those four, Adam, is the correct answer.
Okay, I'm going to go down the 4%.
Down 4.9%.
Yeah.
Adam, you are wrong. The answer is inventory dropped 12.7% year over year. Downtown, Vancouver West.
Is Vancouver
this to me
charge on the comeback
of the market?
So 12.7% decline, Adam. What Richard's kind of cautious, optimistic take is that, you know, this is the first time in 4 years that we've seen inventory declines year over year. And usually inventory declines suggests a stabilization in the market and the first signs of recovery. So that was a great take by Richard. And you know what? You weren't optimistic enough, Adam. Right. That's where you fell short.
Well, if we're speaking of optimism, let's try and weave some optimism into this this conversation with Dan Foch and Nick Hill. A lot of ground to recover. This is all over the place, but in the best way possible. So enjoy.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing. Because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, so we're here with Daniel Foch and Nick Hill, past guests, and of course, hosts of the Canadian Real Estate Investor podcast. As well as Dan's, you are a real estate agent in Toronto, and Nick, commercial mortgage broker in Ontario as well. So welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, I think we're going to do round two of the Toronto versus Vancouver showdown on who's the worst market in Canada. Is that what we're doing here?
We just did round one on your show. So we did, I feel like we talked a lot about Vancouver, but we hardly got into the details of Toronto, except for a shocking stat about price per square foot of some new construction. How is the Toronto real estate market right now? Are the headlines right?
It's the worst. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's hard to overstate how bad it is. It's the worst it's ever been. It's definitely the worst in the country. I don't know. It's bad, very bad. Yeah. It is like, you know, this is like that moment. Like, I always think about it in reference to my parents and talking about, you know, oh, the 90s, you know, so bad, the market went to a halt. But, you know, it's like, you can't really contextualize it until you're in it. And now you're like, I literally will be talking about this for the rest of my life to my kids. You know, that's how bad it, I think, right?
It is funny that I was thinking about this the other day. 6-7 years ago, you'd always run into those old timers that would be like, you don't remember, but, and yeah, now this is, yeah, the 90s moment or whatever.
We're not old timers yet though, fellas, come on, not yet, but
go on there.
I was just going to say it's bad. You know, I had a friend put out an article recently, and you know, me being the only non-realtor on the show here, which what makes me happy, but also makes me feel a little left out. You know, misery loves company, I guess. There's Dan, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe There was at one point 90,000 agents on registered on Trev Toronto Real Estate Board. I believe there's, that number's dropped to about 77 to 80,000. And most of them did not do a deal last year. Okay. And this year will be worse. And I'm on the mortgage side. You know, I've done a lot of residential over the past several years. I'm more focused on commercial, which I'm lucky enough that I can work across the country. So I'm not specifically just pigeonholed to the Toronto and GTA market. But it's the same thing for mortgage brokers. Most mortgage brokers won't do a deal this year. So, you know, that ripple effect of, okay, it's bad for buyers, it's bad for sellers, it's bad for renters, it's bad for all the professionals that are involved as well. You know, if you're not buying, building, selling, well, you don't need property managers. You need less inspectors. You need less appraisers. And, you know, all of this stuff makes up our GDP. And that ripple effect is, you know, that probably referencing that article that you mentioned, Matt, of, you know, the economy here is not doing too well. And all you have to, you know, it's no mystery. It's no mystery why it's not doing well.
So the headline, it's bad. It's as bad as it's ever been, maybe worse than it's ever been. Can we maybe peel back the layers of the onion on the Toronto market a little bit? Like, is it like, okay, downtown condos are terrible, but single family homes in Mississauga are great or whatever?
Ooh, it seems to be pretty indiscriminate, to be honest with you. Like, is there a bright spot? I mean, first-time homebuyer product, probably, like, you know, anything on the, like, close to the price floor seems to be doing okay. And the faster that things can get to the price floor, the better they do. So, you know, condos, we're seeing condos in the 300s again. They're moving if they're not, like, a shoebox. There's, like, a couple of cities in the furthest line on the exterior of the GTA, like, to the point where if you call it the GTA, people will tell you it's not in the GTA, even though it is technically. You know, like Oshawa, Georgina, you know, Bradford, like
Peterborough. That's pushing it though, you know.
Barrie's not technically in the GTA, neither is Peterborough, but like those markets seem to be doing fine where somebody might, like, you know, your first time buyer who got like completely left out of the market for the past like 5 years and they don't, like, they know they're taking risk, you know, but they're just like, they don't care. They're like, I just don't ever want that to happen again. Those are like, those are the people who are kind of starting the knife catching contest, I think. Hmm. Otherwise, like, everything's toast.
Funny, eh? Because I feel like we're going to be dealing with the scarring of the last 3, 4, 5 years for a long time, right? Like, you know, it's one thing to purchase a pre-sale, but if you or a friend or a family member has got really burnt in the last couple of years, like, I feel like that's a generational kind of caution.
Oh yeah,
but you're actually talking about it from the opposite, right? Like, there's still people active in the GTA that, you know, remember all their friends got in, right? Yeah.
And so there are, I guess there's two different stories, right? Like, there is the people who maybe you got in early, you know, really believed in the real estate asset class, was telling everybody on Twitter, have fun being poor or whatever, if you don't buy. And then they're levering up, going, you know, levered long on 5 pre-con contracts at $1,400 a foot. They're toast. Like, they're done. They're like that meme in Tiger King. They will literally never financially recover from that. It was a mistake that will hurt them for the rest of their lives. I hate to say it, but that's like the reality for a lot of people who got messed around in that space. And then there's people who didn't do that, you know, were scared and felt the risk and were bearish in 2020 and 2021. And they're like, and it kind of saved them. They didn't buy at the top as a result. And now it's, you know, now we're down 20-30%. And they're like, is it going to get better than this? Or like, at least they're like, I know at least I'm getting like a discount from what I originally thought. And they're actually starting to creep back into the market because they don't want to see that happen again. And they don't know if it's going to, and they're paying rent or living with family or whatever. So the qualitative factors are starting to align. So yeah, I think there's two stories, right? There's the speculators and even like investment space. And then there's people who just want a freaking house to live.
Yeah. It's like life choices.
So they're doing it.
Well, it's just normal real estate transactions, right? Like, I move, I have a kid, right. I've saved up, whatever. I missed the craziness and thank God. And, you know, there's literally a whole culture out here now. You know, people have literally made big names for themselves on probably specifically Twitter, but Twitter, Instagram and Reddit, et cetera, literally just posting, I don't know if this is the correct term for it, but like basically like loss porn, rage bait stuff where, you know, $500K loss, $1 million loss.
Yeah.
And you look at these houses and you're like, someone bought that for like $2.2 million like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. And it's just the most standard looking home. And, you know, it's still selling at a ridiculous premium at like a $1.2 million or $1.4 million. But there's an $800,000 loss being realized. And to Dan's point, you know, we've all lost money, you know, doing one or number of different things. $800,000 is a lot of money to lose. And, yeah. You know, if you're not a business person or if it's not through a corp or you can't declare bankruptcy or there's not, you know, strategic ways out of it or around it, how does a normal family or even a bit more of a well-to-do family come back from something like that? It's really sad.
Is it like, so just thinking about the different segments in the market, like, so here, one of the stories is that the end user product seems to be outperforming. And when we think about the province, like where there's fewer investors or like where there's just more people living kind of regular lives and moving through the market, those markets tend to be more resilient in the province. Are you seeing that in Toronto as well? Like, is end user product outperforming or
yeah.
How is the detached market?
Well, like it detaches fine in markets where it's affordable, right? Like the problem is like you don't have a lot of wealth and we thought we did, but it was actually debt, right? So you're trying to catch the income curve and we're still really far away from it. Like the end user product in Durham's like the cheapest market, right? Like you go to Durham, it's like not ripping, but like it's doing fine, right? Like, you know, and that you can get a house there on for 5x of Durham income. You go to York Region, which is a little bit more luxurious, or Halton, where like Oakville, like King City and Oakville are like two of the wealthiest municipalities in Canada. They're in York and Halton. Those markets aren't like, there's no buyers because nobody can afford to buy those houses. And your step up buyers would be selling a house to them, but they're taking a huge write down. So that we're just at fundamentals, right? It's either the wage curve needs to grow 10-15%, which it will over 3 years, and that's what it'll take. But I don't know how much time it might take for us to find a bottom, or prices need to come down faster. And if prices come down another 10%, then you're getting way closer to the wage curve. People can start afford to buy houses again. The market can think about recovering. Rates are like the one X factor that if rates come down a little bit, that can, you know, boost the buying power a bit and whatever. But as it stands right now, like it's just purely limited by like, so yes, there are people who want to buy that end user product, but there aren't end user products that are affordable. I'm sure you guys are seeing the same thing with first-time buyer stuff, right? Like the Fed puts out this thing, first-time buyers aren't going to have, they're going to get this tax back on brand new homes. It's like a first-time buyer is not buying a house in our city, right? Nowhere, not even within, you know, an hour drive of Toronto. And so it doesn't have an impact in either of us.
Yeah, it's like a misunderstanding of, how the market, at least in Vancouver, works.
Or developers not delivering $1 million new house in our city, right? So that tax thing is irrelevant to your first-time buyer who wants a single-family house.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the very select lucky few that have the backing of the very specific bank of mom and dad, where, you know, down payment gifts are in the hundreds of thousands, yeah, the average person just can't do it. I mean, you know, I'm going to misquote this, but I think it's like, and I'm sure it's probably not far off in Toronto, or sorry, in Vancouver, but to live an average life at this point in Toronto, you need to be making $250,000 as a household income. For some people, that's not a crazy amount of money. For most, let's not forget the average Canadian income is about $68,000. So that tied with rising unemployment, tied with the price of just about everything these days, it gets a little bleak when you start really looking at the numbers.
Can we talk a little bit about the vibe in Toronto right now? Like
the vibe sucks right now, man.
Yeah,
today specifically.
We were talking a couple of weeks back on our show about. You know, about it used to be that you'd go to a party and like, you know, it was like, oh, I'm in real estate. Everybody's excited to talk to you about it. And everybody's excited to tell you about what they bought and what they're going to buy and what they own. Presumably that was the same.
It's still all we talk about here.
But it's just doom and gloom.
It's just a much different
we
conversation.
Just wallow in it.
Yeah. You're like, can we talk about the vibe? It's like, no, we can't, man. Sorry, we can't. Like, we're not allowed to do that. It's the same conversation.
I haven't been to a party.
Right. You guys are still cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dan and I tell everybody we're podcasters now instead of, you know, real estate professionals. Yeah.
So the best way that I've the bellwether that I have is like how bad the vibe is like the real, like I used to get like RICO complaints. Okay. Like complaints to our like regulator because of talking bearish about the market. Like that was 2021, the vibe. Okay. And then now, and I was like, everybody was ripping on me for being so bearish and whatever. And now people are calling me too optimistic. realtors are calling me. The realtors are more bearish than me. Like, and so, and I'm like just a natural contrarian. So I'm like, frick, these guys are making me want to call the bottom. Like the way these, all these realtors are piling into the you know, inverse realtors is the trade, right? So I'm like pretty close, but that's like the best vibe check that I've seen is like, I'm not the most bearish person anymore. I'm still quite bearish, but like other people are arguing that I'm not bearish enough.
Which is hilarious. You know, I'll drop a little something that, you know, I've been working on with some people in my office for a while now, built this with this crazy kind of AI stack. But we've built, for those unfamiliar, there's something on CNN called the Fear and Greed Index, which basically manages the market sentiment, right? It goes from extreme fear to neutral to greed to extreme greed. And we built one of those out for Canadian housing, pulling from every source you can imagine from across the country, all the way from CMHC to Stats Canada, Equifax, mortgage delinquencies, credit ratings, sales to new listings ratio, days on market. We've even pulled stuff from LinkedIn, Reddit, TikTok, Instagram. And since we've been pulling this in kind of beta for the last couple months, man, it is painting a bleak picture. And we've done a lot of research on sourcing all of this stuff before actually releasing it. And it's kind of the first time I'm openly talking about it, so you're welcome. But You heard it here first. But it's not good. And I mean, look, sentiment is what really, when everybody talks about, you know, everyone's sitting on the sidelines, where have the investors gone, et cetera, all of that, that just means sentiment. That just means people are not feeling comfortable or confident enough to go and spend money and transact and take risk. And that's really what drives the market. So, you know, vibe check, Matt, you know, the vibe is not good. And I don't know what, you know, maybe summer, the vibe will get a little bit better, just a little bit, just because it's been a pretty brutal winter here. You Vancouverites don't have to deal with it. It has been, you know, basically essentially nonstop snowstorms. But Dan, I saw the thing you posted on, I think it was LinkedIn today, where it was like, the market is not just snowstorms and winter. It's still bad overall.
It's like, it's just funny. Like, and, you know, this is just the vibe, man. Like, I'm glad you guys asked, because it's like Toronto realtors are like, our stats came out. Like last year, we were the same thing you guys prefaced, I think, in the episode we did on our show or at the beginning here, is worst market. Like, you know, we had the worst year ever. And then now we just had a worse start to this year, you know? So we had the worst year ever in Toronto, like, as bad as the 90s with, you know, 10 or 30% more population. And we're in January, it was 20% below that so far this year. So it's like, we're coming out of the gate bad. And then realtors are like, but it's been snowing a lot. Okay. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, there's been a lot of snow, guys. And like, don't get me wrong.
What excuse do you guys have on the West Coast? All right.
We did get a record snowfall. Okay. So like,
to the open.
Yeah. But before, yeah, exactly. Like, none of them. It's like, yeah, the buyers are stuck in their houses. So
it's funny though, because here it's like, oh, but it's been raining and it's this and it's that. You know, yeah. Everybody,
we've exhausted
like,
every other.
It's like a like Price is Right spinning thing to figure out why houses exactly, slow.
Yeah. So
choose your excuse.
Like, we fully run out of reasons why the market could possibly be so bad, you know, like, and it's like, it's just like, pay attention to what's actually happening, dude. Like, go talk to your buyers. Like, who's going to go and lever up and bro down on the biggest investment of their life when they don't, like, when they work in the auto sector? Like, Toronto is super exposed to this Kuzma stuff, right? I honestly think, like, when I think about the Trump stuff, it's like, he's got more of a target on Ford because of all of this stuff, honestly, because they have a pretty good war going. Than anywhere else, because it's all auto sector, and the GTA is getting smoked, and why if I'm a buyer, why would I do this of facing this uncertainty? This is the vibe. Is the answer.
Yeah, but it is interesting to think like it's like ground zero, I guess, is what Windsor, the close to Detroit there, where the Gordie Howe Bridge
Windsor,
is being built.
Oshawa. Oshawa's big. I mean, Toronto's like the second highest unemployment in the country. Oakville's got a huge Ford plant, but that's been like shut down for retooling for like a while. Brampton lost 3,000 jobs for Stellantis to the U.S. because of the trade war. So I think like, you know, there's quite a few, but it's all just kind of combining too. Then there's downstream effects. Like it's, you know, if it's, then it's Magna, you know, auto parts manufacturers and distribution and blah, blah, blah. And then it's consumer and now the consumers are smoked. So it's like, we're just going to get it really bad.
But I guess I'm thinking, it does feel like the tariff talk is, and as goes Toronto, goes the rest of the country, maybe. But Toronto is specifically in the crosshairs here in a way that it doesn't feel like out here. I mean, every once in a while you hear softwood lumber, but
yeah.
But
you guys have a bit more of a diverse economy in that regard. Like we have a lot, we have a couple of vulnerable sectors, and like the one we tried to diversify out of that by into housing, right? So it's like condos and cars, man, maybe cannabis too, right? The three C's of Canadian economy. But you know, you like the Oxford Economics and the Canadian Chamber of Commerce did some studies on this, and like they mapped it, and it's literally just like a line, the 401 corridor. That like, you know, like the Italy boot of Ontario is like basically just blood red. It's like, that's where, you know, all of the pain's going to hit. And that's what's happening.
And let's not forget that along that 401 corridor, that's where one in four Canadians live.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that ripple effect is huge. And unfortunately, if we, you know, we see a lot of those people that flee that kind of corridor for affordability. Some of them end up in Calgary, right? Calgary and Edmonton were still number one on the U-Haul index, which is kind of U-Haul tracks where vans and trucks were rented and kind of where they were dropped off. But we've seen a ton of brain drain as well from a lot of the major markets. Like, you know, it seems like there's not as much of a love or an incentive for entrepreneurs, business owners, high earners to stay here right now. You know, and that's, again, that's not just the weather right now. That's just the economics of it, right? I mean, you guys are business owners and entrepreneurs, and you know, you've been talking to the likes of business owners, entrepreneurs, and great minds in Canada for years now. And I think that's just been a problem. It's just been getting worse and has really become exacerbated quite quickly with the trade war and you know, that super slow growth of the economy. I mean, we've done episodes where we're basically covering, okay, you know, yeah, we've had a lost decade, but if you really look at it, you know, almost no GDP growth over a 10-year period. Well, that's almost happened three times in the past 40 years. You know, we're all in and around the same age. That's basically our lifetimes where Canada has barely grown as a country. And when real estate makes up like a quarter of the economy, or real estate related activity makes up a quarter of the economy, and that gets hit, it's no shocker that things aren't good right now.
I just one more kind of down the Toronto market rabbit hole here. You know, the market, I think both Vancouver and Toronto saw pretty significant shifts, like what, mid-2022, kind of interest rate increases started.
Yeah.
When, and from afar, it seems like pricing has come off over the course of the last 3 years bit more dramatically than in Vancouver, but also earlier, it seemed like there was kind of some shocking numbers coming out of Toronto. Where are we there? Are you seeing like bigger declines right now, or was it a year ago? Or are we getting to that point where it's like, okay, the declines are really starting to ramp up right now? Where are we in the price?
I don't think they're not getting faster, but they're still just like pretty shocking on a year-over-year basis. Like it's, I don't even know if it doesn't have to be fast. It's just like the perpetual, like it's not stopping. It's incessant. And we saw the big drop. Like, so we, I think we blew off like 15-20% in year one off the peak. So, you know, it cut off like 5-10% of froth, 10% probably on actual values. And then we've basically been grinding down since then. Like we're 30% off peak and not showing any signs of that slowing. And Rob, an agent at my office, Rob Marsiglio, he's a YouTuber, and he does like really, really good micro analysis on Toronto, like probably the best micro analysis on Toronto. He just put a chart out that shows we've now seen 17 months in a row of year-over-year declines. Like, you know, so it's, you know, when we talk about vibes, like, doesn't have to be a headline. Like eventually people just can't ignore, you know, you hear it. Like there's never like that aha moment for people. It's just been this gradual grinding down of people where all they're hearing for 17 months in a row is bad news about the housing market. And if you're a buyer, it's like, well, why would I buy right now? I might as well just wait another 17 months for prices to be lower again until we hear some good news, which is going to take a while. That's the sentiment piece. And we're at the point where it's just like, it's poisonous. It's like everyone's been bear pilled, man. It's crazy. There's no room in the bear den for me.
How much, Dan, I know. And the only reason I mentioned this is because I kind of fear it myself. I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking this is a great time, at least in Vancouver, to move through the market. like you can get some pretty incredible deal. Like, you know, if you're in a, say you're in a townhouse or a more of an entry level detached house and you want to buy a larger home, it seems like a lot of people are doing well moving through the market. The only thing I'm kind of aware of is the fact that there's also a lot of, you know, people concerned about AI and job security. What do you think, like, are you guys hearing from clients, like, are people actually, is that just contributing to people's concerns around job security and taking on more debt? Like, has AI played a role?
Good question. How much does the AI story contribute to the index you're building, Nick? The index you're building with AI? Yeah.
Well, I couldn't have built it without AI. So, and you know, I'll let Dan, I'll say one more piece and I'll let Dan jump in because he's really been spending more time on it than I have and has done some pretty great things. You know, I think it's just, you know, anecdotally, you know, Dan and I have been lucky enough to travel the country for events we host, for the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. And this has been a kind of topic on everyone's minds for, I don't know, a year, basically since ChatGPT kind of came in and was like, wow, you can, you know, it's a way better Google kind of thing. And you know, that has just been left in the dust the way that people use it. And I think every time I ask someone about AI, you know, they're like, yeah, it's amazing. It's also freaking terrifying. That seems to be the most standard response. And then you start to see these stats and headlines come out. It's like, you know, 20%, 30%, 40% of jobs are going to be replaced. And I think there was this big misconception that it was like, okay, yeah, it's going to be all the lowly jobs, you know, the stuff that people don't want to do. Well, it's you still got to make your bed and you still got to call the plumber, but it's going to be HR departments that disappear. It's going to be real estate and mortgages and, you know, the more white collar, attractive jobs that people, you know, were pulled to that are going to be, I think, the first hit. So yeah. I think there will be a reckoning. I'm not sure what it looks like. My whole hedge against AI is just trying to be a good guy and have a human element that people want to work with someone and really trying to get ahead of it and use it for my benefit and not get left behind. I think there's, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, that relationship business, which we're all in versus just relying strictly on AI. But I think if you're not stacking AI into whatever systems and processes that you're using already as a real estate professional or whatever the hell you do, you definitely should. But I'd love to hear what Dan has to say, because, you know, again, I'd call him much more of an expert on it than myself.
Yeah. I don't think people are giving it as much credit as they should yet. Like, I don't think a lot of people are. I think Nick's right. Like, there's kind of that like you're seeing it out there a little bit, that people are aware, becoming AI aware and like acknowledging it as a risk on the employment side and that it could create destroy a lot of jobs. But I don't know if consumers are super. And I honestly think like we write our own, like it's like manifest destiny kind of thing, right? It's, you know, like I don't know if, as a result of that, I don't know if it will end up being as profoundly. Like, I use it I work in an AI-powered real estate brokerage. We're launching a SaaS that literally, like, has completely changed my life. Like, OpenClaw in the last, like, month and a half, which is basically, like, AI with hands. Like, it can do anything for me. I can text into it. It could do,
not
like,
physical hands. We should,
claws,
before we get too carried away here, everyone. It's like, it's
kind of, yeah. Claws, okay, but, go on.
Yeah, but, you know, it can do a lot of things that like, I, you know, would have given to a VA or like just aren't, I'm not doing outbounding for sponsors for the bit, you know, for events or whatever. But I actually see that as a net increase in productivity. Like I didn't fire anybody for that to happen. Right. And I'm not going to. And I think maybe like certain things like, you know, repetitive tasks, call centers, et cetera, they'll probably see that. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into my own vision of it, but if you just look backwards historically, I think people are going to be like not giving it enough credit. And then you'll start to see some layoffs and there'll be like this mass panic and then it'll probably be overblown and then it'll actually end up being net productive. Like if you look at 200 years ago, firewood was like 25% of the US economy, right? Or 200 years ago, right? And if you go to, and then natural gas happened and it's like, were all the lumberjacks like, you know, worried on Twitter.
Protesting
about, like,
and yeah.
Yeah. No. And now it's just a different economy. You go back 100 years ago, agriculture was like 80% of the US economy. Now it's what? Like less than 20. So these shifts happen, like the massive shifts have happened a ton over time. So I think consumers are giving it like just enough credit. All of that to say, like, it is becoming part of the narrative for sure.
It's funny because but Adam, you were saying you were talking to somebody that has a good job and is, you know, in a comfortable house, and thinking of moving through the market. And they were like,
taking on,
maybe I'll just hang tight. Yeah.
Well, I think here's the thing, right? It's just like, yeah, taking on another $700,000 on their mortgage or something like that, right? Like, just moving through the market.
I was just going to say, like, the one thing I think that if I evaluate the way Canadians think about a lot of this stuff is like, COVID told them that the government will just like have their back. And that's like, for better or worse, because it's not a good thing, but for sure. But a lot of people might just be like, yo, if that happens, like, I'm not the only one it's happening to. And they're just going to like fire up UBI or some stimmy checks or something, you know, just a thought. But like, I feel like psychologically, that's what a lot of Canadians think about. And maybe that's why they don't worry necessarily about it.
Mm.
That's a really interesting take. I think a lot of the things, like, you know, it's just like another layer of uncertainty, right? It's like, oh, there's this new technology that's actually, and I think there's starting to be, I think you're right, Dan, that few people really understand it or understand the capabilities of it or have played around with it or maybe in the rabbit hole as deep as some of the people on this call. But I also think that people are becoming a lot more, like, I've just noticed, actually, it's funny, like, just recently, conversations with people that are using it, you know, it kind of started where people were almost using it like another, like a Google like search, right? Like another Google search, or asking it what they can prepare with the items in their fridge, right? And now it's like, you've got everyone you talk to seems to be dumping all their financial information into it,
right?
or working in some capacity, right? Or doing projects or co-work or whatever it is. But people are, I think, learning quickly on it now. It seems to be kind of shifting in that regard, but yeah.
For sure. Yeah. A lot of people, like, when I got into the OpenClaw stuff, like, this is, I don't know if you guys have heard of this stuff. It's like, basically, like, yeah.
Yeah. You just, like, it's through WhatsApp, right? You basically use it.
You can build it on like any tech. Like I message it, or like, I just use it in like there's like a chat interface on my computer, and you just like ask it to do shit and it does it. It's like remarkable. I've never had like an aha moment with AI. I always was like, oh yeah, like it's cool. It helps like for podcasting. It's like, you know, notes, questions, scripts, whatever. Transcribing something, turning it into a Substack article, like, yeah, okay, it's good with text, right? Now it's like, it has hands, right? It has claws. It has, like, you know, imperfect hands. And that was like where I was just like, this is totally insane, right? That it's just a completely,
and
we're
just,
like a new
just
frontier.
To be, and yeah, not to go down the AI podcast, but for what is the metaphor of the hands? What do the hands actually do? I don't really follow.
Well, it's just like, it can do stuff. Like, AI couldn't do stuff before, right? Like, it could tell you stuff. It could have a conversation with it. It could give you text, but like,
it's actually creating things. Yeah. Okay. Other than like blog posts,
agent capabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was just for the listeners out there, not for myself.
No, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. But all of that to say, like, you know, you mentioned the security thing. Like, people are like, oh, you know, OpenClaw is so insecure. It's like, people will just, like, AI knows more about me than anyone in my life. Maybe Zuckerberg knows a bit more, but like, honestly, it knows like everything, man. You know, you just ask it questions. How much stuff do you think it knows about you at all times?
Yeah.
Can you clear your browser history? Asking for a friend.
ask AI.
Yeah, you got to ask the AI to do that for you. Okay. Well, so maybe shifting back here to the Toronto market. So, thinking about opportunities, like, where are you seeing any opportunities in this market? I know we've kind of been, it was funny, we were pretty doom and gloom on your podcast, and it's a similar vibe in Matt's words specifically. Where are the opportunities?
Yeah, I think I'm seeing like limited opportunity in the multiplex space, to be honest, which is sort of like, you know, why we've really gone all in on that. Like, I don't think it's at its peak opportunity yet, but like the cost differential between developing, it's the only way housing is getting built right now, to be honest with you. There's no other way that housing is getting built other than small format. CMHC even put out a report showing, like, literally if you look at the average number of units on a new development that's launching in certain markets, like Toronto's down like 70% from like 200 to like in the below 100, right? So that's probably the only bright spot in the GTA right now. But the problem is, it's still limited by land costs. Construction costs are getting better. DCs are coming down. You know, CMHC multiplex financing, MLI select on the takeout, you know, and that's I think that's the only thing that's working in Canada, to be honest with you. I don't see anything else that's really doing well right now.
And I think Ontario is a more mature market when it comes to multiplex. I feel like we've talked a little bit about this on the last episode, but we're starting to see them marketed. But how established is the multiplex in Ontario?
It's like in Ontario, it's piecemeal, right? So it's like deal on a deal by deal basis. The place where you're seeing it done at scale is in Alberta, where you've got like basically all the Toronto pre-con brokers like shilling these like pre-made sixplex MLS like takeout deals that with like realtor underwriting and, you know, like they're
scary stuff.
Potato, but it's happening a ton there. Like we're getting an insane amount built. So it's well established. Like it's, and see, like realtors are slinging the, you know, I mean, as soon as you get realtors going, it's like the, especially Toronto pre-con agents, like on their social media and whatever, it's like you just unlock the biggest sales and marketing engine. A bunch of people sitting around with nothing but time because they're not doing any deals, who came up or, you know, coming off the sugar high of making like $1 million in 2021, looking for something to sling to people, right? And so everyone, like realtors are MLI select, like they're PR engine for the CMHC product. And so it's well established, man. Like people are paying a lot of attention to this thing in our market for sure. Just not in Toronto. You get this, the actual 416 deals. They're small infill. They're a grind to get done. Like there's a lot of them happening. I think we got like 700 applications out right now, but it's a grind for sure.
Yeah. It's super expensive. And to Dan's point, you know, I think the biggest issue with, this is all I do nowadays. I do CMHC stuff on a daily basis. I do it across the country. The hardest stuff to get done is in Toronto strictly because of the costs. And that's every cost involved from the studies you need to the net worth requirements to the permitting to the labor to the materials, everything. The biggest danger I see with a really great product, which is MLI Select, that, you know, inherently is a good thing and is helping a ton of housing get built, is it's going to get abused, and it is being abused, just like the pre-construction market was abused, just like every major trend in real estate has kind of that has come and gone is being abused. And, you know, there really needs to be some kind of audit on who's allowed to speak about it or market it. I mean, we're seeing ridiculous things, you know, and, you know, my phone's sitting beside me, and I'm sure all of your phones are close by and probably listening. And now you're going to start to see a whole bunch of random brokers that are standing beside like a 30 unit building saying, you know, guaranteed rents. And, you know, this stuff is honestly borderline fraudulent and borderline illegal, in my opinion. And it's really going to, similar to what we saw with the, you know, a similar program back in the 70s, the MRB program, multi-unit residential building program, which really got a ton of housing built back then when they needed it. That program was shut down for essentially, you know, abuse and nefarious activity. And, you know, I don't think this will last forever. I think it's going to play a very serious role in getting a lot of housing built, a lot of housing typology, which is purpose-built rentals that we haven't seen for a long time in this country. But I think it will have its day as well, have its day of reckoning. And there are some people out there doing things that they shouldn't, and a lot of investors investing ignorantly for the same reason that they were investing in pre-condos, because it seems like the next get-rich-quick scheme. And if you know anything about real estate, it is get wealthy slow, not get rich quick. And if it's get rich quick, get out and get away from it.
You guys host the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast. Where are you guys looking in the country right now that looks interesting? Where are people that listen to you and people you're communicating with investing? What's exciting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the last time we answered this question, we blew up the market for ourselves because we had a couple of buddies in private equity just pile into the trade, and we built a pretty sick portfolio together, but Nick and I are no longer in it because they're, you know, they're just bigger guys than us. And
it made
sense for us to exit.
They were angry at us because we were, I don't want to take too much credit here, but I was getting calls as a mortgage broker being like, hey, I'm bidding on this house, whatever, can I get a pre-approval? And I'm like, I can't help you because, you know, we're bidding on that house as well. And that's, you know, our partners at the time did not like that.
But all of that to say, like, so that was Cornwall, Ontario, by the way, which is still just this wicked market. I still love that market. I like nationally, I'm very interested in places like Quebec. I think that Quebec is just so mispriced, and it's simply a language barrier thing that like people don't want to do business there. And so that's really interesting. I always just look for market like dislocations in regards to pricing. I think there's a couple of markets in Ontario that are mispriced as well. Like when I see a market like Sudbury, or like not even Sudbury, but like rural Sudbury or like Northern Ontario, that has come down as much as a Windsor or a place that's actually impacted by the trade war. When, you know, if I go to Northern Ontario, it's, if anything, it actually might benefit, be a net benefit from the trade war. I think actually the Oxford Economics thing stipulated that. It was like everything that is trade subject would actually like improve Sudbury or rural Sudbury's economy, because ring of fire and materials and whatever. So I like that market. I like rural or like smaller town Northern Ontario, to be honest. Those are the ones that really stand out to me. I would say I'm probably short. I'm short Alberta. I'm short Toronto, or the rest of Ontario, other than like Northern Ontario. Short BC, like Saskatchewan, Manitoba, I'll probably just keep chugging along fine. Same thing with sort of like the rest of the Atlantic Canada, anywhere where houses are affordable, but there's no good investable trades in places like that. Newfoundland's been interesting to me. Like it was on a bit of a tear there for a minute, but I don't know. It's tough to say, like with population growth dropping to zero, whether or not that's going to sustain, right? So I think I covered everything there now.
I like your answer, and you didn't really leave much for me there. So I'm going to take a bit of a different cop out here and say, you know, I think for us right now, and we've spent years advising active clients, active investors, active builders, first time investors that are trying to figure that out. And, you know, I think it's less about what market is performing and more who is doing that deal and what is the deal in that market, right? It's so freaking specific at this point. You know, we've been kind of coining this term, the age of the operator. You know, I think you can get a good deal done in downtown Vancouver. I'm helping clients get good deals done in downtown Toronto right now. Am I telling people to invest in downtown Toronto? No. But if I find a deal and the right person and that, you know, that all those stars align, then yeah, I mean, I'm still, you know, I think Dan and I can both see or both say comfortably, I'm still seeing good deals get done every day across the country. You know, I work in almost every province outside of Quebec. That's the only province I haven't done a deal in. Referral I have, but, you know, and sans territories as well. But, you know, it really depends on who you are and what you're trying to do. I think the general, you know, where to invest question, I don't think that applies as much now as who you are, what you're trying to do, you know, and how good are you at it? Because right now you got to be good to invest in real estate. You got to understand the fundamentals. You got to have the power team. You got to have the net worth. You got to have the risk. It's really a different game than the last time you guys asked us that question.
What kind of exodus have you guys seen in terms of like, just who you're talking to, or change? Maybe not exodus is maybe the wrong word, but presumably fewer people are interested in investing in real estate right now. But how has the conversation changed? Because the idea of the, you know, being a serious operator was not part of the conversation, let's say 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the point though, is like it, you know, everybody thought that like it was a crowded trade, you know, and that's when things get too frothy and you start kind of coming off the rails a bit. And, you know, like similar things you can see happen in other industries when the barrier to entry gets too low, as like, you know, and it was in this case because of credit. Everybody could make money, you know, speculating on pre-cons or whatever. The exodus is just the people who, you know, if you look at the market 2016 compared to today, so like 10 years ago, it's the exact same market, you know, the same people, same participants. It's not like any new or old entrants. All the people who, it's like exact same thing as prices, it's just a round trip, right? All of the people who came in are all gone. So it doesn't really matter to me because I was never selling stuff to those people anyway. Like
yeah.
People were coming to me like, oh, I want to lever up and buy like 7 pre-cons and flip them. I'm like, oh, that sounds like an absolutely horrible idea.
We could have made so much money back then, Dan.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, you don't make a ton of money being a truth teller, right? But
you know, can sleep at night and you're in the business for a long time.
Well, and honestly, like, I don't know if a lot of the guys who were doing that are making a ton of money right now anyway. They're trying to put out fires and avoid clawbacks and trying to get deals to close, you know? So like, I don't think I made a mistake, but yeah, I think you just got rid of all the people who joined the industry during that period of time, and not like our content wasn't for them. And people come like listen to our show or like try and work with us and, you know, hear me talk about certain things. And it's like, that's not my thesis. Like my thesis is like 20% increase and I'm not even closing on this unit. I'm flipping it to some greater fool before closing. That's gone, right? Those people are gone. And they, it's good. One, they have no money, and two, their thesis was wrong, so they've just given up.
Yeah. Maybe there's a final question, and I don't know if you guys are fielding this question very, very often, but Toronto specific, a lot of people hurting. What would you tell somebody right now that's maybe underwater, toying with the idea of selling? It's a challenging moment for them. Like, is it kind of stay the course, you know, kind of an optimistic take, or is it like plug your nose and sell? What would you tell somebody right now who's hurting as a real estate investor in Toronto?
So why didn't you talk to me 2 years ago, 3 years ago? You know, you ought to never let
that's
you
just,
do that.
That's just pouring sand, the time salt into the the wound, Nick.
Yeah. You know, go get a side hustle on betting on prediction markets and I'm lucky enough that I don't have honestly a ton of those conversations. You know, I do a little bit, but most of the best, you know, to Dan's point, most of the people that are attracted to the stuff that we do, most of the people that have worked with us, you know, our legacy clients, our new clients that know the type of people we are, they weren't doing those deals. You know, here and there, of course, I have those conversations, and that is a question that I definitely get asked. And it's a really tough one to answer. It's a tough one to paint a broad stroke with, because you're really talking to people about their livelihood. You know, you're talking to people about potentially tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of loss. So I'm very careful when I answer that question. I think the best answer I could give would be, you know, really take a look at the numbers. And, you know, start talking to accountants, mortgage professionals, real estate agents, lawyers. And that's not a decision that should be taken lightly. It's not a decision that you should likely be making alone without some very strategic advice, depending on how bad the situation is. So, you know, that's kind of my cop-out answer. I try not to paint that question with a broad stroke, just because it is so sensitive for a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mine would be like, yeah, you got to put yourself in a bucket. Like, are you a trader or are you an investor, right? If you're a speculator, if you're a trader, then you have to follow trading psychology. And you have to realize, like, a lot of people don't realize that they were trading real estate. They weren't investing in real estate. If you're a trader, the answer is rip the Band-Aid off. Realize your losses as fast as you can and get in a better trade, right? That's it. There's no solving the problem. You're speculating. But most people cannot accept that they're speculating. They think they're real estate investors. If you're an investor, it's easy. Stay the course. You bought a good asset, right? Keep clipping coupons, yield, you know, add value. And improve the asset if you can, become a better operator. There's not a lot of those people, and they don't need to ask me. So usually the answer that I'm giving is rip the Band-Aid off, right?
Yeah. You want to lose money fast or slow, right?
Honestly. Yeah, that's it.
Maybe, and I have one more, because Matt, I think you said final question.
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts on the market over the next, this year and beyond?
I honestly thought we'd start to see volume recover this year, and I'm calling myself wrong already. Like, the fact that we came out of the gates down 20% in Toronto, and then CREA stats came out today, actually February 18th, down almost the same, like 17-18% for January sales volumes. I mean, sure, call it a snowstorm. I don't, like, whatever, you know? I mean, unless we get to really, really bad recession and rates get dropped like 50 bips by, you know, whenever that happens, that's probably the only catalyst. I thought OSFI was going to reduce the stress test and that would be a catalyst. Not that I felt that that was an appropriate idea. I just got the vibe that they were going to, but they just said they weren't going to a couple of weeks ago. There's no catalyst left, man. The only catalyst left for bearish, like rate cuts, 50 bips of rate cuts will add a little bit to the market, but it's not going to, like, we just saw 250 basis points of rate cuts did nothing,
right?
You know? So I think it's, you catch the income curve. That's all it is from my perspective. Your marginal buyer is an owner occupier. Sooner you catch the income curve, the sooner we recover. There's two ways you can do it, right? You can drop 15% right now and you're on it and you start recovering tomorrow. Or you can wait 2 years and go sideways and we have caught up to it, or 2.5-3 years, right? Some combination of that price decline, you know, time elapsing, maybe rates coming down a little bit to give a bit more leeway, will get us there. So my call was always sort of, we would see a bottom probably towards the end of 26. And this was like, I was making this call in 21. If Kuzma's really bad outcome for Canada, I would maybe push that into 27. But I think, like, when I say bottom as well, I think you've kind of got a continued slow grind down. You've got a long flat, like go back to the 1990s. Like, it's not binary. It's not down and then up, or down or up. Like, markets can also not do anything. You can go 0% for 2 years. That's a big, long, healthy bottom for people to trade in and out, use financing conditions, use inspection conditions, get a sale of buyer's property condition, healthy market. That's what we should all be hoping for. And I think that that's what we'll see, right? We'll probably start, we'll get to that flat point, probably early 27, 2 years of little to no growth. And then you start slowly climbing back again as people's confidence, oh, we've stopped moving down. Maybe we can think about going up now. Maybe I'll bid up on that property. You know, maybe I'll take a little bit of risk. It takes a long time for confidence to rebuild after what we just saw.
Yeah. I never heard the term new normal up until, 2020 and some random time then. And I think we've heard it all way too often and I'm scared to use it, but I'd say we're probably in this new normal for, minimum another year and a half to 2 years. Dan and I talked to a lot of economists. We're lucky enough to do so. I know you gentlemen do as well. And that seems to be what all the smart people are saying as well, and doing a lot of research over the years on how recessions and cycles play out. I mean, the average cycle is about 8 years. Okay. So when did this cycle start? Right. And that's just looking at it from a purely mathematical looping perspective. As Dan said, this one could be different, right? Like we can analyze history. History rhymes, it doesn't repeat. That could mean we've got 3 or 5 years left, depending on when you think things started to get bad. So, my advice would just be adapt to what's happening now. And if you can make it in this market, you'll be laughing by the time it turns around, and it will turn around. You just might have some more gray hair by then.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there. Oh.
On that happy note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. You want to do the rapid fire here, Adam?
Yeah. 5 lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you guys stick around for that?
Of course, yeah.
So question number one, maybe we'll start with Dan. A book that you would recommend for our listeners?
Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one.
This is actually a book that Dan recommended to me, and I think it, there was
it means
a, there's
I get a two new recommendations. Amazing.
There's a new, that there's either like a new one or an updated one. It's the Fourth Turning.
Yeah.
Great. And we'll blow you away. We'll put a lot of things into perspective that are happening right now. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah, it is pretty eerie, actually, that book. Like when you're reading, there's a certain chapter where he's like talking about, it was written in the late 90s, I think. And there's a certain chapter where he's talking about things that might like happen during a fourth turning. And he's like, Russia, Ukraine, pandemic.
Right.
Blah, blah. I'm like, crazy. This is weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
One habit or belief or practice that's had a positive impact on your life.
Or behavior.
Yeah, or behavior.
Yeah, Nick, in the last 2 years.
Relentlessly following up with people. I don't even care anymore. I will follow up with you until you tell me to F off. I had a client tell me that he was going somewhere else today, and I was like, I'm just going to bug you one more time just so I can show you how hard I'm going to fight on your behalf when you eventually work with me. I would literally act like a crazy ex and text you once a week until you'd never work with me or until you do. So that would be my recommendation.
Is this a pitch to get people's contact information?
If that's what, I'll take it.
Ryan would be like every.
You should see what he does when you break up with him.
Yeah. You just got to bring that crazy ex energy to sales.
Oh, I love it.
For me, I when I drop my son off at school every day, he'll like sit on my knee and I'll go like one for one with him. We'll be like, we'll just like repeat, like, I guess you would call it like an affirmation, but it's sick to do it with somebody else. He's only 2 and a half, but it's a pretty good vibe. So I'll just be like, I'm gonna have a great day, and he'll say it back to me. And then it's like, I'm gonna be nice. I'm gonna try my best. And it's a good thing. That's probably the most profound habit that I've had happen recently.
All right. Well, yours is way more heartwarming than mine. Well, I just look like a heartless sales guy over here, right?
Yeah. I mean, man, nothing. Making money to put food on your table, on the table for your family is pretty heartwarming too.
There you go.
Right on.
Question number three. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
I just am on the last episode of Succession. So that one.
Oh, a little late to that.
I know. Yeah. I couldn't get into it the first time I tried, but now I'm like, I don't know, man. It's kind of like, like The Office, like by the end of The Office and you're like, it's like Michael Scott's just like so pathetic. And you're like, I can't, it's like too cringe to watch. I kind of feel that way with the characters in Succession too. No, is that like the point of the show that like, they're supposed to be like, this guy was so successful and his kids are just losers and you hate them? Is that the point?
I think that's a big part of it. Okay. Yeah.
I'm glad.
They're not serious people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm on the last episode. Like literally my wife just falls asleep like way earlier than me. Like when we try and watch a show, it takes like five false starts. So I'll finish it hopefully tonight, God willing.
There's no way she fell asleep during the bore on the floor.
No, that was a it's fascinating scene too. What a guy, eh? That guy.
Nick, what are you watching?
You know, it's so funny. I ask everyone this because I suck at watching things and like I love movies and TV shows. I just work a lot and I come home and I try to like look for something. I spend like 30 minutes trying to pick something and then it's like 11:30 or 12 and I'm like, yeah, I gotta go to bed. Did recently watch one show though that I thought was really cool. I think it's called Your Friends and Neighbors. It's on Apple with John Hamm. That's where that meme of him like came dancing in the club. Cool, really cool show. It was pretty good. It was good popcorn stuff. Nothing, you know, nothing groundbreaking, but I'd recommend it.
All right. What are you listening to? Maybe we'll go back to Nick. Something you're on a drive by yourself. What music's coming on?
Oh man, there's going to be a boring answer as well. I saw this stat that after 30 years old, you don't listen to any new music. And man, is that accurate for me? I listen to classic rock. And this is a plug for something else. I developed this playlist called For the Old Boys. It's like 150 hours or some, or 500 hours of music. So I basically listen just like late 50s to, you know, mid 80s type music. And I will sing that in the car or the shower anytime I get a chance.
I have kids, so I do discover new music. I'm on the new Bieber album. Pretty good, to be honest. Canadian icon. It's a banger. Yeah, for sure.
All right.
I've escaped that one. Yeah, that's
it's so good, man. Go listen to Speed Demon and Go Baby as soon as you can, like right after this episode.
All right. How do I get the one for the dads or what one for the old boys? What's your mix called, Nick? You should share that on Spotify with us.
Yeah, I will. I'm pulling it up right now. It's I rep it everywhere I go.
I've just heard of this. Isn't Nick's like a playlist influencer now?
Not at all, Dan. I've put this on in our work session. So 113 saves, 54 hours of music. All right, for the old boys, check it out. You're welcome. When I die, I don't care about the podcast, the mortgage. Remember me for this playlist, all right?
Pretty great. Last but not least, question number 5, which is, what is something that you've bought for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life?
You go. Bought a juicer.
Mac Mini for my Claudebot.
Oh, you got one. Oh, yeah. They're in high demand.
Yeah. And no, I was so early to the trade, man. I was like, I should have bought like more. I bought two. I should have bought like 7.
Oh. And have you had any, because there's all sorts of things that I've heard about, you know, threats to your
security. Man. So funny. Blah, it's not. Blah, blah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it would be a threat to your privacy, but everything is. I don't think it's a threat to your security unless you're an absolute idiot within like giving it your bank. Like I wouldn't give a assistant or a VA my banking or any of that stuff, right? So why would I give it to this thing? So yeah, you can, if you're an idiot, you can definitely create some serious security issues. It has no more risk from like a hacking or, you know, security or privacy perspective than like Instagram is actually probably worse, like seeing my DMs or like my ChatGPT history or all of those things. So I think that that's honestly like the industry actually maybe trying to gatekeep and like keep people out of it, to tell you the truth, because it's like, it is a really, I hate being a hype machine, man. Like maybe that's why I'm so bearish. It's like, I don't do this well, but like I haven't seen a piece of technology change my life before, like ever. I don't think that was like within days, completely different.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, like to the point where I'm literally going all in on like building these things for realtors. Like we're building a OpenClaw wrapper, like realtor business of like a SaaS version of our brokerage. Basically, we have an AI powered brokerage. We're packaging all of our tools, putting them in OpenClaws, selling them to realtors. Like it is insane how much it's changed my business, my life, my workflow, everything, dude. Like if it goes down for like an hour, I'm like, what do I do right now? Cause I have to do like my job, my actual job. It stopped being able to do like LinkedIn outbounding. Like it's shut down right now. And I'm like, how do I do that? Like I have to copy and paste. I guess it's just a task that's not getting done anymore. Crazy, man. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
That's next episode.
Maybe, Yeah, I'll put you guys on with my Shamir, who's like my technical founder at my brokerage. He can walk you through it. I know nothing about this stuff, but he's a genius when it comes to that. So,
oh, that's incredible. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time today, guys. It was great. If anyone wants to learn more, follow the podcast. How can people find you?
The Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast. Make sure you invite him to our event, Nick. That's the key, because we're going to be a band.
Yeah, Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast on all platforms. Follow Dan at Daniel Foch. Follow me at my buddy Nick. And come out and see us when we're in beautiful British Columbia in Vancouver, Yale Town Roundhouse, April 8th. We'll be there in person. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, let's do, we didn't make a code yet, but we'll just do, I see your guys like acronym there, VREP. Use the code VREP and we'll give them a discounted ticket if you guys want to, do that.
All right. Well, thanks again for your time.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you, guys.
So there you have it, folks. Dan Foch and Nick Hill from the Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast. Past guest fan favorites. They've been on the show before. It was a while back. It's good to reconnect with those guys.
Yeah, and if you want our take on the Vancouver real estate market, you'll want to tune into their show to listen to. We're guests, I think, in a coming up episode. It's either going out this week or in the coming weeks. But we cover a lot of ground, put a lot of stats out there as well. And I think we'll probably be doing a similar show coming up in the next week. So we'll kind of keep you up to date with all the talking points about the Vancouver real estate market.
But before we cut for the day, man, I should say we are big fans of working with people in the VWealth community. So if there's anything we can help with buying or selling this year, we'd love to work with you. Rockstar 5-star review on Google. Check us out. You can check us, find out more at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And of course, GalenaRealEstate.com. And Matt, how can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me at any time to take advantage of our resources or chat about the market, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And if you want to talk to me about the market, I've been having a lot of great conversations about the market lately with people that are, you know, in and around the Lower Mainland. A lot of people checking in. If you want to do the same, it's 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Of course, we've got that nonpartisan line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Have a good week, and next week, another fantastic episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.